Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Are you speaking in 2x speed? Or are they just, do they already have it locked in?
I think we should try to do that. I think I should try to speak in 2x speed. You speak at 0.5 times speed.
That would really mess up whatever algorithm then the apps use to speed us up.
That would be amazing. Like a... can you imagine if we did that and I just talked like this the whole time and then you talked like you normally talk the whole time and then people are trying to like switch back and forth? Oh, goodness.
You're going to sound like the Chipmunks Christmas album. And I can't believe you just did that. That was good. That was really good. Reminder to all listening, this is not scripted.
The hula hoop part always would get me.
That's so great. Welcome back, man. It's good to be with you in the same room, in the same space.
I know. We were in... Yeah, I'm back. Guess who's back? Back again.
Jay Williams.
So, yeah, and you said I look tan. I was in a blizzard.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you're just closer to the sun, you know, the altitude.
That
could be.
That does have an effect.
Hope you drank enough water while you were out there.
I did. I always drink a lot of water at the beginning, and then once your body kind of adjusts, it's not as big of a deal anymore. But yeah, it is pretty amazing. We had a big blizzard, but then as soon as the sun comes out, it's like t-shirt.
That's so funny. Then the snow was gone like in a day or what?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it took maybe another 2 days, but... It was good. It was good to be out there. It is good to be back. It was definitely a stretch. I missed my math. I said 60 hours of lecture. It's actually 30 hours.
Attaboy.
So, but then 2 days I was at a conference where I had to have constant conversations with people.
Sounds like something you'd love to do.
Yeah. I mean, it is. Yes. I do enjoy doing that. And it's also, you know, tiring after a while.
It is. Well, we all run out of words at some point.
I mean, most of us.
I wish we had this on video.
Most of us run out of words at some point. I have yet to find my limit, but I will. But when I unplug, that's the thing. It's when I stop being around those people, then I just crash.
Yeah, then you feel it.
Yeah, so like Sunday afternoon was pretty... It's pretty tough to keep myself vertical after church.
People are probably wondering why we didn't have a podcast last week.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to point fingers, but...
Right.
We just had some technical difficulties.
We did. We want you to know we tried.
We tried. We tried so hard.
We actually did.
And unfortunately, it didn't work. And instead of trying to re-record it at that point, we just said, let's do a double, but this won't be a double length. It'll be double efficiency.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about double the classroom, message that you did, and then the everyday rhythm that I did.
It's going to be one of those addition by subtraction moments.
Yeah. All right. So what should we say about, so we're kind of here on the approach to the landing here.
In our series,
and we wrapped up the environments. I don't know, like, what do we do? Just go back to the classroom one? Do you want to do that?
Yeah, I mean, we can kind of mix it. We don't have to
mix it, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. It was fun for me, it's interesting, Jay, how our perspective on those series is obviously very different because of all that's going on in the background for us, right? As we're writing and thinking and really praying for the people of our church. And to me, it's been really fun to really think together, what could this look like? Like for us to really follow Jesus as disciples and be immersed in these environments that we really need. You know, we really need them if we will grow the way that Christ designed us to and really flourish the way he designed us to. And I think the classroom one, so that was 2 Sundays ago, the classroom one to me for a lot of people is the most intuitive one. If we just said, hey, we want to grow as disciples, many people are going to think of learning in the sense of what we typically think of classroom, right? It's also one where because of that, I think it needs definition. So one of the things that I tried to do 2 Sundays ago was clarify when we talk about classroom environment at our church, we are not just talking about literal classrooms, like when we talk about and we find it in the Bible, because often they weren't in a classroom. There are moments where it is sort of like that, but many times the classroom environment was, you know, just wherever they were with Jesus, right? Whether we're walking and he's teaching, or they're in a boat, right? In a storm and he's teaching. So it's not contained to that. And I hope that's good news for people, because we realize that not everyone's wired to enjoy the literal classroom environment, right? And we're going to take that into account as we do that here. But yeah, I don't know if you think that too, Jay. It's just to me that this one feels like the classroom environment feels like the one that people assume that we need in some way to grow.
I think that is traditionally, it's interesting because I think when most people think about spiritual formation in the church today, in a lot of places, they would think worship and then a small group environment. But before small groups became a really big deal, the classroom was the other environment. It was Sunday school class. It was, more formal Bible study class. And when I was growing up, that was a big deal in our churches, was some kind of class. And then what we realized in the church was, well, that's great, but like, where do you actually experience real life with each other? And so small groups became a much more common vehicle or avenue for that kind of community. And then that kind of sent the classroom, the adult Sunday school class that I grew up seeing in my church, and Bible study classes, they started to decline. And what a lot of churches are finding is that, well, but you're just missing that environment. Like, you're missing the environment. And, you know, you end up being put in a situation where you either have to put some really heavy teaching responsibilities on every small group leader, or like a church that I was at before, you do some kind of video curriculum that people do in their small groups. But for a long time, the American church has tried to figure out how do we mix the community and classroom environment? Because intuitively and experientially, realizing people aren't like three regular things a week is a lot. And what will happen is people will typically choose one. They'll either do the community part if they like that, or they'll do the classroom part if they like that. And so I think one of the reasons, like, that's a big reason why we wanted to design this the way that we did, is because we know that when we do classes, there's some people who just love the classroom environment, and they would much rather do that than be in homes and experiencing that kind of community. And we know a lot of people are the other way around. So the question is, how do you leverage each one of those and help people see the importance of them? So that's a long-winded way of saying, yeah, I think it is traditionally, but I also think there's a whole generation of people who, for them, that it's actually a strange environment. They may never have been in a classroom environment in the church, and they're not really sure what that should look like. So I'm curious, from your point of view, if somebody just said, man, I've never been in a Sunday school class or like a Wednesday night class in that environment, I've never been in that, what does that look like, or what should that look like
to be in that environment?
Yeah. Like, what's the demeanor of it? You know, cause some people think of a classroom and think, okay, gosh, am I going to go in and listen to a lecture and take notes, and then I'm going to get tested, and mm-hmm. then I'm going to get graded, mm-hmm. and we're going to post the grades on Sunday morning.
Yeah. Yeah. For everyone, check the back wall to check see if the you back passed. Wall.
Don't worry, we disguised your name. We just put your first initial and your last name.
He's joking.
I am joking.
Just to be clear, we're not doing that.
No, we're not doing that.
That's so great. Well, I mean, so my best experiences of that, so like, I grew up and that was normal, like you. And then we've been, over the years, when we were doing our missionary work, we had privilege of moving quite a few times. So we've been in a lot of different churches, and they all had something like that. And I think my best experiences of it were when it was done in a way that was very community, like even that classroom environment can be relational, right? Where you're not just this passive receiving information, like that here's a deposit. But I do think that that part is important. Like one of the things in the sermon, one of the points I was trying to make was that idea that we saw like with Apollos, that he didn't know what he didn't know. And because that's the way it is for all of us, like we just don't realize what we don't know. We need people who can instruct us. All of us need it. And it doesn't mean that the goal is to just always hear new things. That's not the goal. But the beautiful thing about doing this in an environment where we are a church family doing it is that we will learn new things from each other. And then we get to process with each other what we learned. Because to me, that's the huge win. So like how people change, the class I taught a couple times now, that's less of a lecture style and more of a hybrid. Like there's a small group component to that one. There's some homework in that one. And there's a lot of interaction over it. And that to me is like what makes that one in particular, and the content for that one requires that you need to be able to engage it. It's why it's so rich and transformative, because you're not only getting to know Jesus better, but you're getting to know yourself better. And then you're doing that with other people that you're growing in community with. And that's just beautiful. And we will have on our pathway, when we do these on Wednesday nights, we'll have different styles, right? And different kinds of content require different sorts of delivery, right? They just do. So if you're doing a class on the Trinity, well, that is a class where you'll have to probably have a bit of reading and you'll have to have some lecture because you just need to learn it. You need to take it in, but we don't want it to stop there. Right? We need to process that then. Like, what difference does it make that God is this way for our everyday lives? And that's where we want to go with it.
I think, that's one thing I want to make sure that people remember is, so with the classes, we're going to categorize them and kind of codify them, meaning you'll know what level of participation this class requires. You'll know going into it, is this a class that's going to be mostly lecture? Because some people will want that. Some mm-hmm. people will say, listen, I'll go in. I just don't want to have to share a lot right now. I'm not in that place, or whatever the case is. And they will, we'll make sure that people know what level of participation. Is there homework outside of the class? And part of the beauty of that is it gives us the space to be able to do things like that. If you're trying to say do a one size fits all kind of class experience, then you're trying to hit the middle, which is really going to be no man's land. And the person who's hungry for, man, I've got time and I want to read, I want to be challenged. And then you're going to try to give a little bit for that person, but that's going to be too much for the person who's in a season of life that's just not possible. So I would say that structuring the classes in that way, and for each term, we're going to have a mix of those types of classes. And we would always encourage somebody, to go out of your comfort zone every once in a while. You know, like I think you'd mentioned it, and I don't remember if it was in the community or the classroom, but you talked about feeling uncomfortable, that's the environment for growth. And it works for both community and classroom. The idea that we are forged when we are in challenging situations. And so we would definitely not say, look, well, if you're not typically a classroom kind of person, or you don't like to read or whatever, we wouldn't say, well, then never take a class. That we would say, well, you should every once in a while, maybe once a year, take a class that's going to really challenge you. Because you'll learn different things in that environment than you normally would learn. And to your point, you don't know what you don't know, which is why discipleship doesn't, in scripture, doesn't just look like, oh, when you have a question, ask. It certainly does look like that. When we know we're struggling with something, when we know we're lacking wisdom, we ask God for it. We ask others for counsel. We ask others for help. We ask others to pray for us. That's a really beautiful and important part of discipleship, but so also is being taught things that we never even thought to ask questions about. I mean, imagine if you got trained for a job and the only thing they trained you for was what you were curious about. Like any job you could imagine, you'd probably have some questions. There'd be some things that you'd wonder about, But then there'd be things that you didn't even know you should have asked. And so both of those are really important.
Yeah, and that's just part of, I mean, it's the challenge of being a creature, but it's also the way God designed it, right? We just don't have comprehensive knowledge. And part of being a disciple is growing in that, which is a beautiful thing. And doing that together, to me, is so rich. Because one of the things I'm thinking of when I say that, Jay, is that there's so many options now that if we wanted to just listen to podcasts while we wash dishes or we commute or YouTube videos, we could learn a lot doing that, right? That and there is some really rich material. There's also some material we'd say, I don't stay away from it. But the benefit of doing this together in a church family is that it's not just the information, it's the relational part that we get to experience together. And that interaction over it is part of what God uses to grow us. The processing of it and the when we have to distill it down, when someone asks us, so what did you learn in the class, you know, last week? That's so good and so important if we will take what we learn and do anything with it beyond the classroom.
Yeah, I think that that's what I think I'm most excited about with this is people just trusting and saying, okay, I'm going to put myself in that environment. You know, one of the reasons, like we mentioned, that we are overlapping them is part of it is because we want people to be able to give us two times a week. But the other part of it is that it will push you out of your comfort zone a little bit rather than just over here offering classes and over here offering small groups when they are separated. Well, this will be different. Like your greenhouses will be talking about the classes that they're going to and that they have gone to and what they've learned in them. And the classes will be talking about their greenhouses. And so I'm really hopeful for that because I get it. When I hope people hear that, unfortunately, the way the church has functioned, like just the American church in general, is trying to offer things that people want on the surface rather than what people need. So imagine if you're coaching a sport and the coach just asks the players, well, what do you want to do? What sounds like fun or what do you like to do? And then you're going to have kids who are like, man, I want to scrimmage. Let's just play, or can we do this game that we do? But no player is going to ask to do the things that they're really needed all the time. Scrimmaging's great. A lot of the things that players will ask to do, they're also really good and beneficial things. But you have to, if you're going to be trained in anything, you have to submit yourself to the trainers who are saying, but I need to holistically train you. I need to make sure that we are developing you in all the ways that you need to be developed. And I think that's one of the weights of being a pastor because, you know, a teacher has grades. A coach has playing time. A job trainer has like your salary and your hours and just your job. But a pastor doesn't have any of that. Like, I can't bench anyone from worship. You know, I can't be like, well, you're sitting on the bench today. You didn't, you know, and nor would I want to, right? Like that's not the setup for it. It's unique in that it feels more like a consumeristic thing, like a restaurant or whatever we say, oh, or a community center. You know, like if the Marinette Community Center, imagine if the people in charge of the Marinette Community Center were responsible to make sure people were physically healthy. Like they're just responsible for it. That wouldn't work. You know, if you got a letter in the mail and said, hey, we're going to have you do racquetball this term. And you're like, yeah, I'm not doing racquetball. They have no, like, there's no authority there, nothing. So I don't, does that make sense? Like what mm-hmm. I'm trying to get at and the challenge that it is a little bit,
yeah.
You know, and people wondering like, well, but I like to do this. And I know you do, but I'm responsible. I'm accountable to God for how we're shepherding and forming people. And so I need like a little bit of trust there for it.
Yeah. I think I love what you were saying a little earlier too, about the greenhouses and how that will inform that as well. You know, getting when you are in a small group community like a greenhouse, that that is focused on knowing Jesus together, growing in him together, and then you get to take classes together.
The fruit, or separately, by the way.
Yeah, that's good to clarify. So we're not, what I mean by that is not that everyone in your greenhouse takes the same class. So you don't like vote on it and then dive in, but that you're all entering that environment, and chances are you'll be in class with someone, you know, from your greenhouse, and getting to experience that is so beautiful. Yeah, and so that's a good point too, Jay, you're making about how are we going to pick what classes are offered, right? And I think if only people could see our whiteboards in the last 6 months, they would know that we've been giving this a lot of thought, and we're working on that. But we want to do a range of them, both in style, like the kind of content, but also the way it's delivered. If it's more of a workshop, if it's more affinity based, like I mentioned in the sermon, so like that'd be like a parenting class, right? Or even things like a membership class. You know, it'd be a great time to get to do that. I do think you mentioned this overlap. I think it'd be great to just for a minute get to those concrete logistics in case people, because it's been a couple of weeks, yeah, just to refresh people, like what are we thinking? How will this work as we just think about what the year looks like coming up, how we're envisioning that?
I think you should do it because you knocked it out of the park.
Okay, I'll try.
Those two, man, I was like, oh, yeah, why don't I just say it that way?
Yeah, so here's the idea. On the regular weeks, the normal weeks, we're in greenhouses, and most of those will meet on Wednesday night. There will be exceptions, like we mentioned, like there might be a Sunday afternoon or whatever. But typically they're going to be Wednesday nights because youth group and the other ministries that were happening on Wednesday are no longer on Wednesday. So that night has been freed for us. And then for 4 weeks at a time, we'll stop meeting as greenhouses on that evening, and we'll gather here at the church building for classes together. And we'll repeat that cycle four times. So four times throughout the year, you'll take 4 weeks of classes. And then all the other weeks are going to be in the greenhouses together. And so it's really neat, actually. So if you were concerned about, will I get to see, you know, what if this family I really love isn't in my greenhouse? Do I get to be with them? Well, yeah, that's what the classroom is neat, because all the greenhouses will be together on those evenings. And again, that I think it does become clear why we're saying we're aiming and we're asking for two times a week. Because if we add class on top of greenhouse and worship, and then if you're involved in any other ministry here, right? If you're a deacon, if you're serving in some way, it becomes like every night of your week or every other night of your week you're here. And that's not what we want for people. Right? We don't want that. We know there's God has called us into the communities that we're in. We need to be there, and we need to be in our homes and in our neighborhoods together as well. So that's what the rhythm looks like. What would you clarify there or add?
Yeah, there's nothing I would really add or clarify. I mean, maybe just to say so that people get a vision for, if you picture a 52-week year, 16 of the weeks will be in classes.
Yeah.
And the remaining 36 will be in greenhouses. So it's, you know, about a 2-to-1 ratio of being in community. And in those greenhouses, like you'd mentioned, though, that we're going to be practicing the faith together. So it's not, I'm really excited about what that will do for the greenhouses, because they won't feel the burden of having to teach everything, but they can still explore topics together of like, how do we study the Bible? How do we, and then let's do that together. So like I envision, you know, man, it'd be so great to have them go through Philippians, but not as like a teaching thing of like, I got to get every nugget out of this, but to learn, how do I read scripture like this? And let's practice it together. Or let's practice prayer together. Or let's practice serving together. There's so many things, and those will be plans. Somebody had actually asked, will all greenhouses be doing the same thing? And no, that'll be a plan that we'll come up with between elders and greenhouse leaders and the greenhouse itself, of saying like, hey, that's the more responsive of, you know, we'd really like to grow in prayer. We'd really like to grow in serving together, whatever the case is. And we can help kind of orchestrate that and facilitate that. And then, yeah, when you're in those classrooms, you'll be, a greenhouse might decide, hey, let's all take this class together, like, because they realize they all want to take the same class, or they might get spread out. That's totally their choice. So yeah, I think that would be that's the logistics of it. And I will say this, in my 30 years of doing ministry, I've had a lot of ideas. No, anybody that knows me knows that I have a lot of ideas. Also, anybody that knows me knows that I second guess my ideas more than probably anyone. I mean, how many times in staff meeting have I started out with an idea, and by the time I've won everybody over to the idea, I've now changed my mind and I don't like the idea anymore. Like that, mm-hmm. You know, that happens. You're nodding, but I can't see you nod, Jeff.
I'm nodding loudly.
You are nodding loudly. emphatically. Here's what I think is so neat about this, that we've been stewing on this for, I mean, I don't even remember, is it close to a year?
Yeah, like it's been a while.
It's been a long time. And I've never, I mean, I've gone back and forth on certain little details, but the rhythm has just seemed, oh, this is good. Mm-hmm. And that's really unusual for me to not want to go back and totally reinvent whatever it is that we created. And that says something. And also when I've shared it with other pastors in other areas and just kind of bounced the idea off of them, they love it. And I think it's because we've all been feeling this tension of we need people to be in community, and we also need them to learn some things. Like, if you're going to be a disciple, that means you need to be in deep relationships with people in everyday life. You need to, that rhythm is critically important, but it is also critically important to be in a learning environment where you're just receiving an understanding more, the knowledge, not the knowledge that puffs up, but the knowledge that, you know, within love that builds up. I think it's just so critical. And what every pastor struggles with is, how do you do that outside of having three separate things that then people will choose two out of the three? And we also don't want to make Sunday morning worship is not, that's not educational hour. Like, the point of proclaiming the gospel is at its core, is we want to proclaim the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus and call people to respond to it. It's not the time to teach on the doctrine of the Trinity. Like, it's just not the ideal place for that. And so I get really excited about the rhythm as a whole. Is there anything else you want to say about the classroom? I mean, I think people feeling just trusting and knowing, like, some people are going to love it. They're excited about it already and wish that we could do it for more than 16 weeks. But we also know, and I think we should point out too, and I think, I don't know if you mentioned this or not in the message, but one thing we are saying, we're asking, is that in those four blocks, you know, those four, so there's four-week blocks. So if you think of a block as a block of 4 weeks, that one of those blocks, it would be awesome if you would, if people would serve. So we'll have Bible Lab for kids. So being a helper in the kids ministry, or being, you know, helping with logistics or anything like that. So for some people, I think there are some people who the classroom is just a challenge for them. And you could one or two times a year, you could just say, you know what, I want to help with the kids. I want to help in some other way. And that's awesome. You know, we're not like, I hope people don't hear that we're saying everybody needs to go to a lecture class four times a year and be all in on that. It's, there will be a lot of variety in how people will experience the classroom environment. But I think it's going to be really great. I'm really excited.
Yeah, man. I have nothing more to add to that environment. I was really excited for this last one, this everyday life environment. And I do think, in contrast with maybe classroom and community, I think that this one is one that is missed.
Yeah.
That people, it's just not as intuitive that discipleship to Jesus is ongoing. It's like when you're at work, it's when you're commuting to work, it's when you're at the grocery store, it's happening all the time. And I loved how you emphasized God's constant loving intentionality with that, right? That he doesn't waste moments.
Which I should have pointed out. So as we kind of transition into that, I think a good transition is to say, I wish I would have said that includes the community and the classroom and the worship environment. So God is always forming us. He's still the one that's forming us in the worship environment. So surrendering every moment to him, But I did mention, because I was making the point that we, that's more on the front of our mind when we get, walk into worship on Sunday morning, and how we're just different in that environment. And partly we're different in that environment because we're mindful that we are surrendering to him in that moment. So I mentioned, and I don't think that, I don't know if it landed or if people understood it, but I mentioned how it's not being fake on Sunday morning. It's just you're more mindful and aware that God is with you. And I wish I would have pressed into that a little bit more to say, see how you function here. The reason you're functioning here, I mean, it could be because you're being fake, I guess. But for most people, it's actually the effect of being very mindful that God is present with them. And if you could be that mindful that God was present with you the rest of the week, you would probably respond in a similar way the rest of the week as you do on Sunday morning or in a small group environment.
Yeah, it's less like about being duplicitous. Like it's not like you're fake. It's, I think part of it for a lot of us is just intentionality, right? Like it's, why are you there? And it's very clear. And sometimes that doesn't mean that we always feel like being there. Like you're open about that. I'm open about that. But it's like what God does as we enter into that and his faithfulness to us in the middle of that. And the fact that we know even when we're having a moment, maybe it's a dry season spiritually, or we're just exhausted from the week, and we enter into that environment of worship, we're doing so with the knowledge that we are with him and he's with us, right? And that we're with other people who are worshiping him. And that you're right, it does. It sets us on a different path because of that. That's where I think, imagine if everyday life were a bit more like that, right? And it's not like that we can, most people don't have, a lot of people don't have jobs where they can think about more than one thing at a time. You know, where they can like do the thing while they're thinking about something else. A lot of it's like you're engaged and that's all you can do. So we're not saying when we talk about everyday life discipleship that you're constantly like ruminating on a verse while you're doing the thing. That's not it at all. It's the actual thing you're doing that's good. It's not. So I think sometimes we try to add a religious category to the things, and that's not so much what you were getting at. It's the actual work itself. God is doing something in you and through you, through that work. And that's part of what discipleship is. Like, imagine if you were Jesus, we know, could have used his hands, right? Or any of the disciples. So say they were fishermen and you wanted to go fishing with Peter. No doubt, he's going to teach you a lot about fishing. And while you're doing that, you're going to be growing as a follower of Jesus as you imitate him and his ways and his demeanor and all those things. That's what we're getting at.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, that's a really good point that you're going on about your day and doing the things you need to do. Like you're going to work, you're doing your job, you're going to the grocery store, you're doing whatever. The point is, and that's why I put a lot in the preparation, like the intentionality, that if God is planning our day intentionally, then we should also prepare intentionally. That will do a lot right there. That puts you into a frame of mind of just surrender right from the beginning. So when things are not going the way that you expected them to, that it doesn't completely throw you off. But it also then allows you to be more faithful. For example, if you go into your, say, a factory job where you're doing the same thing over and over and over again, and you don't like your boss, and you don't really care if you hit the quotas, but if you've gone in prepared, thinking, okay, I'm working unto the Lord. Like this is the task he has in front of me right now. I'm going to work and I'm doing this thing, but your mind is set on Christ and his presence with you rather than your boss or your company, you know, or your teacher, and you go into a classroom and you have a particular class that's challenging, that is, you know, that is draining, or you just don't want to go into work that day for whatever reason. It's a different motivation when you are very aware that, okay, God has ordered this day today. I want to be intentional and present and faithful in it, whatever he has for me. It just radically changes our perception and our perspective and our attitude towards all of it.
It does. It's an unbelievably different way of living. And that doesn't mean that we know exactly what he's doing, right? When the plans change. And I think that can be a misunderstanding at that point where you're just asking God, what are you doing? Why did you do this? And we spend a lot of energy maybe trying to figure that out sometimes. And that's not the point. It sometimes we do know. Sometimes we end up realizing, oh, wow, you were doing this. But the point is we know who he is and what God is like. So when the day does change or the circumstances take a turn, we can trust that whatever is happening, which is often mysterious to us and maybe almost always mysterious to us, we can lean into him and trust him that he's doing what is really good. And that to me is what, you know, as a disciple of Jesus, that changes your life significantly. It changes the way, it doesn't mean you're not disappointed. It doesn't mean you wish things were different sometimes. That's not it at all. It's how do you handle those moments when really the pressure goes up, the heat goes up, and things aren't going how you were hoping or how you expected. Knowing he's with you changes that. And those are key moments. I mean, I think about my life. Those are moments where he transformed me the most, right? I think there is transformation that has happened as I've intentionally entered a classroom, right? Or I've immersed myself in community intentionally. But it's these moments that I didn't anticipate. But even though I didn't anticipate him, doesn't mean he wasn't, right? He wasn't working. And that's where I've experienced so much change, just everyday life.
I think the idea that we don't have to figure out why he's doing what he's doing is really critical, because I hear that a lot from people. Like, I just want to know, what is the lesson he's teaching me, or what am I supposed to get out of this, or why is he doing this? You know, I mentioned this on Sunday, but I think it bears repeating that it's so easy for us to read these accounts, and knowing how it ends up, it changes the perspective. We forget that the people who are in it don't know. Mary and Martha don't know Jesus is going to raise Lazarus from the dead. Like, the crowds who are hungry don't know Jesus is going to feed them. And they certainly don't know that he's going to raise from the dead, even though he told them. But Paul and Silas have no idea. And when you read, sometimes when Paul, in his letters, he'll allude to that. I don't know. I want to be able to come and see you. I hope to be able to come and see you. I don't know. When he's writing letters from a prison, he doesn't know if he's going to get out or not. He doesn't know if he's going to, like, what's going to happen to him. And I think that's really critical to remember that they're sitting there in that jail and they're not trying to figure it out. They're not trying to piece it together and say, oh, well, this is what God is doing. And they're not even asking him. They're just singing songs of praise, like hymns of praise. And so I think that's a critical piece of this, is not to overthink trying to like crack the code as if that'll help you like get through it. The reality is what God is saying is, no, just be faithful and keep walking. Just keep swimming. That's the line in my, you know, from Finding Nemo that we use all the time in our house. Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. And then, you know, things will be revealed either in this life or the next. Like, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. So you went to a couple places that I thought it'd be helpful to just highlight briefly, at least, about like the practicals, because this isn't one of those environments that you'll have a sign-up sheet for. So right. Like the next step for the classroom and is to watch out for when the classes are coming and join one. But this is everyday discipleship to Jesus. So were there a couple of those, Jay, that, so one of them, I'll just tip my hat here. One of them that I'm thinking of is you mentioned practicing the presence of God as being a key thing that it's going to be necessary and will really enhance this environment. Could you just unpack for people, like, when you say practicing the presence of God, what you're thinking of and what you're assuming that looks like concretely?
Yeah. So in that, I use the illustration of being caught in the middle of the middle section in the plane. And just how many times in my life, just praying this prayer, God, you are with me. Or be still and know that I am God. Just taking a moment to reorient myself around the idea that God is actually present with me in that moment. And what that does and how that changes things radically is just, it's unimaginable, because, you know, I've said before, we function differently when different people are around us, right? Like we could have comical examples of that, of like everybody remembers being in school and doodling or not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And then the teacher comes around and then all of a sudden you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. I remember out at recess, we weren't allowed to play tackle football. And so we would play tackle football until the one teacher who was responsible for all the kids on the playground would come around the corner and someone would yell. And then you're like, oh, now it's touch football. So there is already ingrained in us that, you know, there's the idea of integrity is who you are when nobody's watching. And yeah, that's true. But there's also, I don't know, there's also a relational effect that people have on us, right? Kids often play harder when their parents are there watching them play, you know, when someone's watching them play a game. I remember preaching to no one in COVID and just struggling so much because I just didn't, the tangible effect of it was just so lessened because I'm one that it's not the content that really gets me going to preach a sermon. It's like to try to help people to proclaim Jesus to people. And so for a lot of people, like just that reorienting yourself and realizing, okay, if I play harder when my parents are there, if I preach harder when the church is there, if I live differently, if I speak to my wife differently when her dad is around, like if there's all these different things, how much more would it affect my life to realize the sovereign God of the universe who created me and knows me and loves me and is working all things together for good, that he is actually with me? And so to me, it is as simple as just, like I would practically tell somebody to start praying that prayer. Anytime you feel that sense of feeling alone, feeling overwhelmed, feeling like you're in a place you're not supposed to be, that this isn't how it's supposed to go today, or frustration or anything, just start with that prayer. God, you are with me. I don't understand why I'm here right now. I don't understand why this is happening the way that it's happening, but I do know this. I know that you are with me, that you are not surprised. You are not off somewhere else helping somebody else and you lost track of me. And now here I am. He's like, whoa, where'd you go? Why are you over there? You know, and you are with me. And just how different that makes life.
It does. And you and I both love when God's used Psalm 139 in our lives. So if you're wondering like what would be some good language to have, there's that one is a great example of what it sounds like to talk with God about his presence. But really throughout the whole Bible, but especially throughout the Psalms, you will hear people talk about and pray to God about his presence, about him being near us. And because he's near us, that changes things. It changes what our circumstances look like. I don't remember who said this, Jay, but the phrase is that God is our circumstance, which I just love that. So like no matter what we're in, whatever we're dealing with, the circumstance is ultimately that we're with God. And for me, that's what I want. I want that to be formed in my heart more and more and more, that's what I'm just living out of. You know, Psalm 23 is another good example of it. You know, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. So you put yourself in the middle of that, and that helps situate you. You know, another practical that you mentioned that I wanted to highlight before we land the plane here is just the time of daily surrender. That is so key if we're going to follow Jesus. And can we just talk about that for a couple of minutes, what that could look like for people?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Whenever we talk about spending time with the Lord in the morning, we often think of quiet times and Bible study, which that's great. But I would love for us to think of it in two different ways. The critical thing that happens in the morning is that surrender and reorientation to God's intentionality and to his presence in our lives and what my day is actually for. That's what's critical. And so, I mean, if it was just about learning the Bible, well, our Wednesday night classes, we'd do them early in the morning if that was the optimal time to do it. There's a lot of different times people will read scripture throughout the day or whatever, but to reorient yourself, I do think it's critical at the beginning of your day to just have 10 minutes, 10 or 15 minutes where you just say, okay, God, I'm aware of your presence. I'm aware of your intentionality. Like, this day belongs to you, and my desire is to be faithful to you in this day. There's something really powerful that happens. And by the way, I would say, not just at the beginning of the day, but I would say at any transition. I remember somebody telling me a long time ago about how they would prepare to enter their home after work when they had young kids. And I never thought about that before. I would just drive home. My mind would be on all kinds of things, and I would get home, and every day it would be like I got blindsided by my kid, you know, wanting to tell me about their day or whatever. I wasn't prepared for them. And so mentally and spiritually preparing yourself and saying, okay, Lord, whatever happened today at work, I'm about to enter my home, and I'm going to have interactions with my spouse, with my kids, and I need to be prepared for that. I need to be ready. I need to be mindful that you are intentional in this moment, that you're doing something in this, in these interactions, and you are with me, and that my only responsibility, I mean, this is the light yoke and the easy, like the light and easy yoke is this idea of just respond in faith. I'm not in control. Like, the yoke is not, I've got to make sure that my kids act in the right way or do the right thing, or I got to make sure that everything's going right. That's not, that would be a heavy yoke and a heavy burden. But the yoke is just go in and be responsive in faith. Same way when you enter your job or you enter any, like obviously worship on Sunday morning, you enter any kind of context where you say, okay, any kind of transition, I would encourage people to even just pause. And then, you know, maybe when it's like you're going into the grocery store and you're like, it's 30 seconds in the car or while you're walking in saying, Lord, you have ordered this. Like, I'm not walking into this just into the unknown or into the chaos. Like, this is you. Or to your kid's game. You know, like there's so many environments that we are in a day-to-day basis that if we reoriented ourselves around his intentionality and his presence, and we saw the main goal is to be respond faithfully, which, like, to your point, responding faithfully may very well just be doing your job. Or you're working at the concession stand. So you do your job. Like, you're just present. You're doing it with Jesus. And then that ends up being kind of on display.
Yeah, to me, it ends up being about kingdom building. So, like, and which kingdom am I building into? That's what the surrender often for my heart is. Like, so if I go into the day, and then I'm glad you mentioned that, by the way, the throughout the day thing, because that is true. It for me, at least, I need throughout my day to have moments of surrender. In the morning for me is crucial, but if I'm not throughout my day saying something like your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as in heaven in some way, I can quickly start to drift in my own heart. And I lose, you know, you lose perspective. It's kind of like what you're getting at earlier with worship and how you gain perspective in that moment and intentionality. The surrendering is, it's also acknowledging his goodness, right? It's acknowledging his care, all of that. It's not just about like my will versus his, but that's what I think when we pray that way, that's what we're praying, is that we want your ways. And I think doing that continually, and this is something where, I don't know, Jay, if you've ever, oh, I know you have, we've talked about it on here, just reading sometimes spiritual biographies or autobiographies sometimes can be really insightful, and to see how God's people throughout time have done that. There's some really great examples of it that are just rich, and they've given me, like, we need new imaginations for what that looks like. I think that's part of our challenge with it. If you've been walking with Jesus for a while, it can just, you kind of have a habit, but it's helpful to have new ones. So, like George Mueller, his amazing, if you haven't read that, and maybe some of Andrew Murray's stuff about that has been helpful. I think he might have a book called Surrender, but that's so key if we're going to learn and walk with Jesus. And you think about, I don't know, lately I've been doing this a lot, this like thought exercise where I put myself back to the days of Jesus literally walking on earth as if I was walking with him. And if you're going to do that daily, that's a daily surrender that I'm going to go where he's going. If I'm going to walk with him, I don't choose the direction I'm walking. He is. He's the master. And, you know, in some ways that's easier, but that's a lot more radical too, right? Like wherever he's going to go today, I'm going to go. But that's the mentality that we all need if we will walk with him in that way, is that he's the one leading and I'm following him.
Right, which is that surrender you're talking. I mean, that's, I love that picture, because we'll say a lot that most people think of the Christian faith as, okay, I'm going to keep just, I'm going to live my life, but now I'm going to live it in a Christian way. I'm going to live it in a way that is honoring to God. The irony is that's not actually honoring to God. That would be like, Lord, I'm gonna worship this idol, but I'm gonna worship him. I'm gonna worship this idol in a really Christ honoring way.
Well, that's so gross.
Yeah, it's so
when
gross.
You put it that way,
right? Like I'm gonna be really I'm gonna be really moral about it. I'm gonna be really consistent about it. I'm gonna like, Lord, would you bless me in my worship of this idol? That's what we do when we just say, okay, well, I'm gonna live my life, and I'm going to ask God to bless it. And then I'm going to be upset if he doesn't bless my idol worship. It is really twisted, but that is what we do. True surrender to Christ, when he says, like, lay down your life. If you want to find your life, you have to lose it. Like, true surrender is, Lord, I'll go wherever you go today. I'll follow you. It's John 6. The disciples, when the crowds walk away, and Jesus says, where are you going to go to? And they said, where else will we go? You have the words of eternal life. Like, we've come to believe that you are the Christ. And so that is that daily surrender. And the joy of that is that when you do lose your life in that way, you do find it, because it's so much better. And that's why I don't ever want people. So there is a huge cost. You have to lay that down. And like, it's not about you today. It's not about what you want to accomplish. It is about the kingdom. But the beauty of that is there is nothing more fulfilling. There's nothing more lasting. There's nothing that will produce more joy and more contentment and more peace. All those other things, that's why we do those other things, because we think they'll deliver joy and fulfillment and satisfaction and peace and security. But it's not found there. It's found in Christ. And it is scary. It is like when we talk about a leap of faith, it can be. But I just love it, because, I mean, how many times you get to the end of your day and you think, man, what did I even do today? Like, everything that I tried to do was foiled. You know, I tried to go run these errands and the store was closed. I tried to do this job. I didn't get accomplished at work what I wanted to accomplish. And now I feel like I'm running around and doing all this stuff. But when your job is to just be faithful, the question then is, were you faithful in that moment? How did you respond when the store was closed? How did that carry over when you went home? How did you respond in faithfulness when your boss like loaded another responsibility on you that you're thinking, I don't know if I can get this done, or whatever the case is? And then, were you available for the kingdom? Were you practicing his presence? That's a different thing. Then you can get to the end of the day and say, well, I was faithful today. Like, that's the measurement. And that's pretty incredible, because it's not dependent on circumstances that are out of our control. It's so much of our life, we determine our the quality of our life or the joy or anything based on things that are completely out of our control. And surrendering to God is acknowledging I'm not in control, but I know who is. And so I'm going to measure everything according to him and what he's calling me to do. So yeah, I think, I don't know. Did you understand what I meant? Because I feel like it did not land. But did you understand what I meant of how it felt a little bit like cheating, like a fourth environment that is like everything else?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where everything's lumped in.
Yeah. Where it's like all we're asking is Sunday morning, Wednesday night, and every other minute of your day.
Yeah. Just two times a week.
Just two times a week plus everything else. But like we're saying, not for us, you know, that's that in an ironic way. I wish I would have said it that way. And I wish I would have mentioned that that's why we're saying, that's why I don't feel badly about like the two times a week, because we're saying the rest of it is where God has placed you. We're trying to like have those intense times of equipping you and building you up so that you can go and be faithful and being formed the rest of the week and living the life that God has called you to live, which is different than what that's different than the life he's called the person who's sitting next to you in church, different than the life he's called them to live. That's part of the beauty of this whole thing, that he weaves us all together where we have very different lives, but we also have these overlapping experiences, whether it's geographical or familial, and then obviously within the church. And it's kind of a cool thing where we weave in and out of each other's lives to build each other up, to stir one another to love and good works, so that we're able to go into the places where he spreads us like leaven, which is what we talk about in the kingdom, that it is small things become big things, but then it spreads, and this is how it spreads. It doesn't spread like we just in a big lump where we all just now go and do this thing. We always think about that in the church. We're like, well, let's get all of us to go volunteer at this thing. We'll have 100 volunteers at this thing and all wearing a Faith Church t-shirt and whatever. And I'm like, that's not as effective as building you up intentionally and then spreading like leaven throughout the community. So yeah. That you're in the school, you're in the courthouse, you're in the grocery store, you're at the ball game, you're all these different places, and it spreads. And just imagine the impact on our community if everyone in our church bought into that idea and just went about their day, like how that would spread.
It's amazing too. I mean, when you think about the spiritual reality that's a reflection of, you know, like that we are members of the body of Christ. And that means that we are united with each other in him. And not all of us are going to coach soccer, right? And not all of us are going to just fill in the blank with all the things. Not all of us are going to be at the homeless shelter today. And not all of us are going to be on our street in our house today. But the body of Christ is. Christ is. He's doing that. And we're united in that. So just because we're not all at the shelter together doesn't mean that we're not united in that. And I think that's an important acknowledgement of just our creatureliness as well. And the fact that God is going to position each one of us strategically for his kingdom. Like he's very intentional about that. That's one of those things that we don't pick. He does. The people that live near us, for example. Rarely do we ever get to choose that. He does. The people we work with, all these examples. And I don't know. I just think that's a profound reality that this everyday life environment helps us to lean into. He is at work. And in all the places that I think we, rightly so, can feel like they're just the mundane things of life. But those are the profound moments. And, you know, that's partly why we're calling greenhouses, because they're a unique environment. They're a very controlled environment. It's different. And it's meant to then equip us and encourage us and build us up for the environments that are not controlled in the rest of our life.
Yeah, it's a protected, controlled environment where real growth happens. So it's not pretend growth. Nope. It's real growth, but it is in a little bit of a sheltered. And when people, if anybody asks like, oh man, two times a week, like why not one time a week? Well, I mean, look, if we were a church of 75, we could probably do that, but that's just not the reality for us. And, but I remember thinking when we were doing all this and I was like, oh, that's, you know, structured. So it's basically like 4 hours a week. And that's generous, but like if you gave 2 hours on Sunday morning, 2 hours on Wednesday night, that's then 164 hours that are left for everything else. So I don't think it's actually that much. But our hope is that if people buy into that, then, I mean, man, just think of the transformation in our own lives and in the community if we were able to all be formed in that way. So we know, I mean, we said at the beginning of this whole series that there are going to be a lot of questions, and there have been. I just can't stress enough that make sure you ask them, because chances are we want it to be scary for the right reasons, not for the wrong reasons. Like there will be scary moments for people. People are going to have to go out of their comfort zone if they want to be formed in this way. But like you had pointed out, that's how we're forged. You know, that's how we're formed. And so that is going to be the case, but you don't need to complicate it. So we mentioned some people are, the reason why we say Wednesday night, for example, is because then that's your regular rhythm. It's very easy to go to when the classes are going to be on Wednesday night. So if you're meeting in your greenhouse on Wednesday night, then that just makes it a very easy rhythm. Like you're just in that regular rhythm of Wednesday evening. But we know that that's not possible for everyone. And we know there will be greenhouses that will meet at different times. And I think we've mentioned this before, but we're also not saying like you can't keep doing. I mean, people have Bible studies. They have things that they've been doing with people. Well, that's great. We're just trying to take seriously this call that we have to, as best as it depends upon us, to set up an environment where our church family are able to be formed as disciples of Jesus, and that's our responsibility. And so this is a response to that. We're really excited about it. So let us know if you have any questions. Anything that has popped in your mind at all, let's talk about it. You can email us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com or talk to us on a Sunday or fill out a communication card. And we'll look forward to talking with you, and we're looking forward to seeing how all this unfolds and all that God does. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. We hope it's been helpful. Until next time, grace and peace.